The Amateur Hour podcast mock draft continues. We are at the Atlanta Hawks. I'm Brian Gimmerman here with Sam Vecini, joined by Robbie Callen. Robbie, what's up, man?
What's going on, guys?
My dog is licking my foot right now. So
nice.
Yeah,
I'm watching The Edge of Tomorrow again.
It's a good movie. It's fun.
It's a really good movie. Highly suggest for those listening.
Like, everyone should watch that movie. I don't know why. I mean, part of it is they screwed up the marketing so bad that, like, no one knows what the actual name of the movie is.
Right.
Like, if it's that or Live, Die, Repeat. But, like, you should see that movie with Tom Cruise. It's fun.
It's really excellent. It really is.
Robbie, do you ever have less than two TVs surrounding you?
No. I mean, my living room has three, so...
Robbie's living room has three, and then if he's not in there, he's likely at a bar watching things where there are...
Sam knows me well.
And then at work, how many do you got?
There are two giant TVs in my cube.
I miss the days of having multiple TVs in my living room.
Yeah, it's not a bad way to live.
Yeah, surprisingly, I only have one. Sometimes during heavy college basketball times, I'll move it out and, you know, have two. But
yeah,
a lot of times I only have one.
I don't have one in my room because I pretty much stay in the living room unless I'm like going to sleep. So
yeah.
I have a three my rationale is college football season. I need to be able to watch as many games as possible.
Yeah.
In football, you can watch many games at once because it's not nearly as fast paced. Like basketball, like I usually have, like, during the NBA season, I'll have three NBA games on, but like I'm usually only really focusing on one. And if something grabs my attention, I'll go to another.
I'm the same way as you. I like the multiple TVs thing for football more than any other sport.
Yeah, it's a slower pace, and I can actually legitimately watch three football games at once. It's really quite wonderful. I suggest it for anybody that has the means or people that live with them that are willing to have it.
Yeah, I have a TV in my room because I have a roommate. So sometimes I just like to have a TV in my room just to get away, you know?
Yeah, see, my roommates, my roommate and his girlfriend, they just stay in their room. And I just sit out here in the living room by myself most of the time. So, it's nice.
I don't do the TV. I was about to say, I don't do the TV thing in the room because, number one, it stops me from watching TV. It's like, all right, I've watched TV way too much already. I don't need another one in my room. And if I really want to, I can just bring my computer in there and watch on that.
Right. Yeah, it's something I kind of, because I don't even know what I would do. I'd just, like, sit in bed and watch TV, like, all night. Like, I would have a serious problem. Because I've never had one in my room. Like, it would not go well, I don't think.
Yeah, my parents didn't let me have one in my room growing up. I used to fight with them all the time about that. I was like, you guys are jerks.
Same.
I've had a TV in my room, I think, since I was maybe 12 or so. So I'm just used to it at this point. I need it. It's there for me. Sometimes you just got to have it.
Fine, Sam. Your parents are nicer than ours.
You have cool parents. Yeah. Cool. Good for you.
I'll have to share this with my mother. She'll be very happy to hear that.
Oh, man. I'm so glad. I'm really glad that my appearance is the one that just hijacks this podcast and takes it 100% away from basketball.
I was about to say, should we actually talk the Hawks or not?
I don't know.
I think people are much more interested.
Yeah.
I think people are much more interested in listening to us talk about televisions and stuff. The Hawks are the Hawks. They'll do something. That's my insight. They're going to do something with the 15.
The funny thing is, like, the Hawks are one of the most interesting teams in all of basketball this offseason.
Yeah, and I mean, it's going to be just fascinating, but, like, at the same time, whatever.
That was a pretty solid transition, and I like how Robbie ignored it and went right back the other way.
I'm going to resist.
You got to resist. Got to do it.
Anyway, what do you want to talk about?
So, what do you think the Hawks are going to do this offseason? Robbie.
I think they re-signed Paul Millsap.
Yeah.
That's one I'm fairly confident in. because Paul's made some money in the past. Paul's going to get a lot of money from the Hawks, and Paul realizes as much as anybody that the Hawks are probably the best fit for him to get another contract in the future as well, just because he can still excel. He's never played at this high of a level because it's such a good fit for him in the system.
Yeah.
I think Damari's gone. I think the Hawks had a good chance of re-signing him up until that knee scare in game one against the Cavs. And if anything, I think that might have sealed the deal for him that he's got to get paid. Because Damari's never been paid.
The guy
came in as a, you know, I think it was a second-round pick in Memphis or a late first in Memphis. Never really got money there. Went to Utah, didn't get a lot of money there. Hawks, he's making 2.5. So it's one of those things where, like, he's like, I can get an 8-figure payday. I'm going to go get it. And I don't know if the Hawks are going to be able to or be willing to lock up this kind of core group. It depends on if they really think this is a core that can make a championship run or not. And I don't know if they believe that.
Yeah, so Paul Millsap has made $53 million in his career. DeMar Carroll was a first-round pick that didn't even get to his two option years.
Yeah.
So he's only made about $8 million.
Yeah, he's made,
And DeMar Carroll will make about, I would say, $11 million next year alone. $12 million
I think Damari's at minimum on that 11, 12. I honestly think somebody's going to throw 14 at him.
I think that's an overpay, but.
Absolutely an overpay. And if there's one thing.
Hi, guys. My team's here.
Yeah, the Knicks. if there's one thing I know about this Hawks front office, especially the guys running it now, it's that they are not going to overpay.
Yeah.
They're not going, you know, they love Damari. Everybody in Atlanta loves Damari and loves what Damari does. But Bud and Wes and the guys that are in that front office right now aren't going to be giving any sentimental contracts that get to, you know, 13, 14 million a year. And I honestly think somebody's going to overpay on Damari.
Who?
Here's my question then. What do you think Millsap is worth? Millsap's going to be 30 to 31 next year season. I don't think he's on the downslope. I mean, this year, but again,
you're going to be paying him in his 30. It depends on how comfortable you are paying him X amount in his year age 35 season is really what you're coming down to.
So you think it's going to be 5 years?
But is he 30 or 31 this year?
He's going to be 31 midway through next year.
Okay, so I think it's a 4-year deal. So sorry. So in his age 34 season, which the way Paul plays, he's not. I think he's the type of player that can actually transition towards that older game. Like he's not. Like he's a really good athlete, but he's not like an explosive athlete. He's just he's very fluid with his movement. He can handle the ball and that sort of thing. But he doesn't play a ton above the rim. I mean, he got in this weird thing last year where he tried to dunk on everybody once a game. It was really funny. He would try like one dunk every game to dunk on top of somebody. He wouldn't admit that he was doing it on purpose, but like he always had to smile when I asked him about it.
I support that fully though.
It was really funny. There was like one game where he destroyed Jared Sullinger. It was really weird, but he didn't do that nearly as much this last year. And so I think he's the type of guy that can actually transition towards that older man game. Like he's kind of got it. Like he's a footwork guy, mid range jumpers, 3-pointers. So I think I don't have a problem paying him 16, 17 a year. I think that's what he's gonna get.
I guess he'd continue to evolve and end up shooting more threes and probably being pretty good at it, too. That's not something that surprised me at all.
Yeah, I think he's I think he's the type of guy that's going to, especially within a system that the Hawks run, he's going to eventually become more, step out more and be outside, you know, and maybe shoot more of those jumpers rather than trying to take people off the dribble. I think the looks will be the same, but instead of floor and try to get to the rim. Maybe he settles for a few more of the shots as he gets older, which I don't think would necessarily be a bad thing. That was one of the things that people pointed out in that Cavs series. They were just giving him the shots, and he was hesitant on taking them. I'd like him to be a little more decisive with those.
Oh, we're talking.
He is going to transition into Rashid Hood. Very nice.
Yeah, it's going to be beautiful.
We're talking about what they might do. Do we know who's going to be making the decisions yet? Has that been all figured out?
It's going to be Bud and Wes. Wes Wilcox, the assistant GM, who I think is going to do a phenomenal job. And I hope that they just, you know, I mean, that's who's making decisions and who's been making decisions for the last year in Danny's absence. And all reports are pointing that Danny's out. It's not official. I haven't heard anything definitive. I think there's still a small bit of hope from certain folks that he's back. But one of the things that didn't help Danny is when he came in, he burned a ton of bridges to make it his team and his culture. And so he doesn't have there's a lot of people in the organization that have been there for a long time that carry weight that don't have Danny's back as far in this situation. He kind of burned some bridges, upset some people, and the reason he has a chance still to come back is that got bought by Grant's group, and there's some Duke guys in there and guys that Danny knows and has good relationships with, but I don't see it at this point. It seems like the writing's pretty much on the wall that they're going to have a mutual split. It seems to be they don't want to fire him. They don't want to kind of end the career, you know, because that would be kind of disastrous for his career. So I think you're going to end up with some kind of mutual split there. But it's going to be Wes Wilcox and Mike Budenholzer.
You think that hurts them? You think that hurts them at all? Because Danny did a lot of the legwork building this team.
No, because these are all, I mean, Bud and Wes were right alongside building the team.
Okay.
I think another thing that people kind of forget is Danny kind of fell backwards into this team. If what he had wanted to do had happened, this team wouldn't be together. If he had got, I mean, he wanted Dwight and Chris Paul. He wanted the stars. He went after all the stars and didn't make it happen. He made great moves as for Plan Bs, signing Millsap, signing Damari Carroll. He made great moves for the Plan Bs, but these were never Plan A.
Well,
this team wasn't Plan A. And I mean, I get that that's part of being a GM, but at the same time, they truly thought they could get some of those guys.
Getting Dwight and CP3 together wasn't a bad idea.
But what I'm saying is, and then last year they wanted to go after big names and couldn't land them, and it's one of those things where it's just, it's been, it's not like this was the initial plan. You know, everybody talks about, oh, we wanted to build a system and a team, and no, they would have loved to have gotten Chris Paul. Like, they would have been thrilled by that. They would have loved to have gotten Dwight. And honestly, I don't think this team's as good with Dwight as it is with Paul Millsap. If you don't have Chris Paul, like, let's say Dwight just comes here by himself, I don't think this team is as good with Dwight, current version of Dwight, as it is with Millsap just from the fit. So it's one of those things where, you know, he deserves a ton of credit, but at the same time, it's like, there's a lot of stuff that goes into making this team work, and as much as anything, it's Bud getting these guys to buy in.
Where do you fall on the idea of blowing this, not blowing it up totally, but, you know, you have Horford coming up next year. You have Teague for 2 more years, which is good, but Millsap's up, Carroll's up. They could really, if they wanted to, you know, go a totally different direction. Where do you fall on the idea of that?
I think it would be a big overreaction to a somewhat semi-disappointing, and I mean, the reason it's disappointing is it was a sweep. Like, getting to the conference finals is something this team has never done.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you had told anybody before the year that they were going to make the conference finals, they would have been like, oh, okay. Like, that's pretty sweet. And obviously situation, you know, you have to look at it within context, and it wasn't a dominant run through the first 2 rounds of the playoffs. They looked a little shaky against Washington and Brooklyn at times, but they got to the Eastern Conference Finals. They showed some they kind of gritted it out for a couple of those games. You know, they played them really tough in game three, and you know, I mean, it was one of those things where I think it would be an overreaction to a really poor end to the season that was the best season in Atlanta Hawks history in the city.
My next question would be then, assuming they sign Millsap, let's say, to that $16 million deal, and then you renounce Damari, you renounce Elton Brand.
You renounce Perro. John Jenkins is off the books.
Yeah. Keep Muscala, because that's a cheap contract, and that's...
Oh, yeah, Moose is back, you know, and then there's some smaller moves you can make.
Yeah, but you're at around $11 million then. In cap space. Do you think that they're going to try and go after someone big? Like, if you wanted to, you could probably pretty easily trade Tabo, probably pretty easily trade Mike Scott's pseudo-expiring deal. Do you think that they try and go after another max guy?
I really think it depends. I don't think they would move Tabo.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think he's actually, especially if you think Damari's leaving, I don't think you move Tabo. But...
Yeah.
Mike and Shelvin, you could clear, I think it's
six.
If you click, I think that's $6 million for the two. I think you could clear six if you can move them. And so you've opened up another $16 million, $17 million. It wouldn't surprise me if they made the push for somebody else.
Wes Matthews? I know the Achilles, but God, would he be good on that team?
Wes Matthews would be amazing with the Hawks, and I mean, if you're gonna kind of swap somebody in the Damari Carroll spot, that'd be a great move. I would like that. I think, and I also think it would be if you do Wes, then you probably don't use all of that space. I mean, I don't know how much he's gonna get, but 15 seems about the number, right? Like, he's not getting a max. Would he?
Wes isn't.
I don't understand what people's valuations on guys are at this point, you know?
I would say Wes is probably going to get, like, 10.
Wes, 10? Okay.
Yeah, just with the injury, I think
it's complicated.
With the injury, it's complicated.
Yeah. So, I think probably you're looking at maybe 10 to 12. Yeah, I think that's a fair estimate. Yeah, I mean, 15 would be super high if somebody really wanted him and missed out on everybody else. And that's going to be the interesting thing this year is how long guys will wait. Will we kind of be held hostage in this free agency by LMA and Mark Gasol until those guys sign somewhere? Because there's going to be teams that open up money for those two guys that don't get them, and then all of a sudden we got some money to be spent. Is Danny Green a free agent?
Yes.
Yeah. I would kill for him too. But I don't see him leaving San Antonio. But if San Antonio screws up and or just decides like they're gonna go for Mark and Kawhi and all that, sign me up for Danny Green or Wes Matthews. I'd be cool with either one.
When does free agency start?
July 1st.
Is that the official? Is that
the signing day? Is there's like a 10-day moratorium?
The signing day is the 10th.
So,
and then you have people talking on the first.
Yeah, you agree to deals beforehand. Like, you can agree to
it. It's all handshaky, weird stuff, and the NBA says it's not, but everyone, you know, it's stupid.
I idiotically booked a vacation July 9th to July 14th.
I'll be in Vegas for Summer League the 9th through the 18th, which is always fun.
You are. I can't believe you do that for so many days.
I'm probably doing the same this year, so...
Yes, we're back!
Yeah.
Oh, God, I can't wait for that final Saturday when we're losing our minds together. It's going to be beautiful, Sam.
It's going to be beautiful.
I didn't go last year,
so I'm excited to be back.
I know you didn't go. I was bummed. Yeah. It was like a make poop Jardine puns with.
Exactly. It's miserable without it.
Never forget.
It's just never going to be the same.
I might try and pull off showing up for that last weekend if I can. I get back on the 14th.
Dude, it's just a combination of misery and, like, haggardness.
I want to play pickup basketball with all the bloggers, but by that, I'm assuming when everyone's hungover by that last weekend, that's probably not on the agenda.
We played last year, we ran two pickup games that I remember, and both were pretty rough. They were both at like 11 p.m. too.
Oh god, we played pickup at the Final Four this year with like some dudes that can legit ball. Like Rob Doster from NBC Sports played D3. Dude can legit ball, and it was just bad for like me and other people.
You're playing
were, like, just out of shape and.
Were you drinking when you were playing beforehand at 11 p.m. or did you play sober?
Did
I think he's talking to me. I think I'm trying to remember what exactly happened because I remember I went to. No, I don't think I'd had anything to drink at that point. I remember. I played after eating In-N-Out, which was a terrible decision.
Oh,
I've drank and played basketball before. It's like top five worst things I've ever done. Multiple times.
In-N-Out also is up there. I remember it was really funny.
In-N-Out might be worse.
I think because anyone that's ever been to the UNLV, you walk to the In-N-Out. It's not far from Thomas and Mack. I remember I walked there. I think I did a radio interview in Atlanta. This was at like 9 p.m. Vegas time, so it was like a midnight radio show, and I just agreed because I knew the producer, and I was like, yeah, I'll do a hit about Vegas Summer League that nobody out in Atlanta cares about. So I did that from outside the In-N-Out Burger, and then went in, we ate, and I walked back to my hotel to pick up my stuff, and I got picked up at like 10:15 to go over to Impact for a run. And the first game I played pretty well, and then it all just kind of went downhill, and like, it was a weird group of people. Like, it was like, some of us, like a bunch of us had kind of organized the thing, and then it got out to a bunch of people who we didn't exactly want to be there, and so it was a strange run. And then the next time we played, it was with it was some other gym, and it was with some of the team site folks, and bloggers, and that was a better run.
I've never played with any of the. I've played with a couple guys out in Phoenix, but outside of that, I've never played with anyone. I would like to do that. That always seems like
it's,
fun.
It's really interesting because, like, you know, it's funny because it's clear that everybody just forgoes what basketball knowledge they have and like basketball acumen, and it just devolves into chucking. It's awesome.
That's the way to play. I don't step foot inside the 3-point line when I play. I will fit in perfectly.
I'll go down on the block if I get a smaller guy. Like, I'm a big guy, and if I can get a mismatch, I'll go down on the block and put some work in. But other than that, I roam on the perimeter. I set screens and pop. I don't roll. I screen and pop.
Yes.
You know who else put some work down on the block?
What's up?
You know who else put some work down on the block?
Who does? You're about to segue into something. I feel it.
Al Horford does.
Al Horford puts work on the block.
Sam, you're doing a good job of keeping this under control.
When Sam's the one keeping us on track, it's
bad. What are your thoughts on Horford's last year in Atlanta under contract, at least? Probably won't be his last year, in my opinion. But do you think that he's a legitimate flight risk at this point?
I don't think so, just because I think the Hawks will give him the max. I don't see how you can't. Especially considering the max, you know, it's kind of lucky for the Hawks because he runs into that first cap jump when we have to give him the max, so it's a little bit eases it in, right? So I don't see any way the Hawks don't re-sign him. People talk about Al is like, oh, he's had injuries. He's had two torn pectorals. There have been three in NBA history. He has two of them. He's never shown any signs after those, each of those injuries, one to each pec, which is super weird. And, like, I've talked to him, I've talked to the team doctor, nobody knows exactly why he tore both of them. They're like, doesn't seem like there was anything structural. It was weird.
He has big boobies.
Apparently. But they're fixed now, and they're stronger. So that's not an issue. The people talking about he's got injury issues, I'm like, no, not really. He had two freak injuries that knocked him out for a season, and one time he had a shoulder thing.
Is there any hesitation giving him that max at 30 years old?
No. Again, because I think Al is the type of player that will be just fine going forward for 4 or 5 more years. Mm-hmm. One, he's got pretty much 2 full seasons less wear and tear on him because of those injuries. So the miles on the legs aren't as much, which I think that's, I think more than anything, you worry about the legs wearing down as a big guy gets older.
Yeah.
And so he's got two less seasons of wear on his legs because of those pec injuries.
Yeah.
And I think, again, he's the type of player that he plays, he's just a smart player, really good footwork, for the most part plays under the rim, shooter, has a great shot, he's developed that 3-point shot a little bit in the corner, still the best mid-range shooter in the NBA, from his position, in my estimation, in that 15 to 18 foot range. I think he's the type of guy that moves on in his career and is great for another 5-6 years.
Knocked down 48% of his 400 shots from 16 to 23 feet last year.
Yep.
Which
That's just crazy.
Insane.
Yep. And he fell off briefly in the playoffs when he broke that pinky, but he was back to shooting well once that got healed later in the Cavs series.
And Budenholzer is a guy who's showing that he's taken the pop thing and he's just rolling right along with it. The minutes that he can kind of extend these guys' career to if he continues with what he did this year.
Yeah, I mean, he doesn't play anybody over like 33 minutes a game, 34 minutes a game, on average. I mean, there's some games where a guy will 38, but nobody's pushing 40 on the Hawks usually unless it's like 8 guys on the healthy roster. I remember a couple games last year where I think Damari and Thabo were both out in Bays, played like 42. But other than that, like for your main guys, yeah, Bud does a great job with that. And honestly, I think I'm interested to see if next year he kind of learns from this, where the Hawks clearly lost their form towards the end of the year. And I wonder if we see a little less of the rest and just more playing the guys their normal minutes and just making sure that you're not really killing them. But maybe not doing the mass rest that we saw at the end of the year, because it was clear that they weren't right. They weren't the same. The offense wasn't flowing the same way.
And then maybe bump once the playoffs roll around, it's all right to bump it up a little bit, too.
I would like him to do that, yes. It was, I think that was my only complaint, really, was I'm on record as yelling about Bud's rotations plenty in the playoffs. He got better towards the end. I think he started to figure it out late in the Washington series, like, okay, these guys need to play 38 tonight. But early, I was like, dude, you can't play the starters 32 in the playoffs. It's not going to work. But, you know, everybody kind of forget, it was his first year as a head coach. He had to learn some of those things.
Absolutely. There's no reason to, like, that's not like going off about Bud, or he should be fired or anything.
No,
like,
absolutely.
Just slight improvement. How do you see the Schroeder-Teague thing developing?
Oh, it's going to be interesting. I've had people this offseason saying we should trade Teague now, and I'm like, did you see Dennis play in the playoffs? Did you watch the young man? I love Dennis. I've been on Dennis's, like, I've been all in on Dennis since we drafted the kid. But he's not there. He's 21 years old. He's not ready to be the starting point guard. He still breaks plays way too much. He loves to ISO. He is overly aggressive on the defensive end. You know, we look at him and everybody talks about, okay, baby Rondo, these sorts of things. But he is, he's got a ways to go, and having the competition with Teague, I think, is good for both of them. I worry a little bit with either one of them. Teague used to be a little apathetic, and I think having Dennis behind him, where Bud will pull and sit Jeff for an entire fourth quarter, we've seen it. He did it in the playoffs. I think that's good for Jeff. And at the same time, I think having Jeff ahead of Dennis is good for Dennis, as like, okay, this is what I'm trying to get to. I think eventually Teague's the one that gets moved. If Dennis continues to improve, I mean, he took a huge step from year one to year two.
Really did.
I got a massive step, and like, because I watched a lot of him play in both years, and it's just incredible the step he took. And I think one of the things that and this is something that I think a lot of us have a problem with as far as writers and bloggers, is we just generally assume that progression is lineal, and that a guy makes step from year one to year two, he makes a step, from year two to year three, he's making a step. That's almost going to be the same, where if he takes the same like type of step, he's an all-star next year, because that's how bad he was in year one and how good he was in year two, but that's not how it works.
No.
I think the step from year two to year three is going to be a smaller step, but what you want to see is that there is some improvement. Keep tightening up the jump shot, which he really improved on. Keep tightening up the finishing. It got loose in the playoffs, and that was a problem. He couldn't finish at the rim. Keep getting better there. Learn when to be aggressive on defense and when to pull back and just play defense and keep a guy in front of you. He loves to pressure. He thinks he can steal the ball anytime, and he can't. He got torched by Jarrett Jack in the first round because Jarrett Jack, wily veteran, he would just put him on string, get Dennis out of the way, and then pull up from mid-range. And it was a problem. That's where Dennis has to go. He has to get smarter as a basketball player and keep improving on the smaller things, the finer points, because he's got the skills. We know he's got the skills. But it's not time to move Teague and hand this one over to Dennis, especially when you're still a contender.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, Robbie nailed a lot of the stuff that I was going to bring up about Schroeder. A lot of what his improvement was this year was skill-based. Like,
yep.
His jump shot took a massive... massive step forward. He went from being a useless three-point shooter and a pretty rough free-throw shooter for a point guard to a league-average three-point shooter and an 83% free-throw shooter. Like, that is not the kind of progression that you expect to see in a young player that is 20 to 21 years old. It's just really not. So I think that Robbie's right. A lot of what you're going to see this year is you're going to see the game slow down. For Schroeder, it's going to be, he's not going to like aimlessly drive into the paint against two big guys and throw up a wild layup, which
yeah.
He did a pretty decent amount of. You're not going to see the over the, you know, reactionary defense that you really don't want to see from a point guard. You'd rather your point guard just cut down penetration as opposed to going for those steals a lot of the time. That's the kind of stuff that you're going to see from him. And if he does that, I mean, I don't know that the sky is the limit for him, but, you know, a couple all-star berths might be the ceiling for him. He's a terrific,
yeah.
terrific talent. I don't know that he'll get there, but even if he ends up as a Drew Holiday type, that's a win for the Hawks, getting him midway through the first round.
So that's one-time all-star, Drew Holiday, the user.
It is a one-time all-star. I didn't even think about that. But yeah, like, Drew Holiday's
yeah.
a top 10 to 15 point guard in the NBA.
Absolutely.
Like, that's a win for the Hawks if they get that
one,
Schroeder.
Out of what, the 16th pick in the draft that year? Absolutely, that's a
yeah.
huge win. And, no, so I totally agree, but I think people are looking at the Teague-Schroeder thing and trying to figure out where it's going to be in 2 years, and we just don't know because so much is going to come down to how much Dennis develops those smaller things and how much the game slows down, like Sam said, over the next year and a half. Because I think you're going to get to trade deadline in 2 years, trade deadline 2017, and that's when you're going to look one of them maybe getting moved, because you could see them pay both, you know, but Teague's on such a bargain right now at $8
yeah,
million a year, which is just still insane to me. Teague's on such a bargain, and then Dennis is going to command something probably close to 10 if he develops to starting caliber type guy. I mean, that's where that's what you see from a starting point guard now, is they're getting close to 10. So we'll see. It's going to be interesting, but it's really hard to project out right now. I think people calling for Teague to get traded this offseason are way over. Reacting to Dennis's development from his year, age 20 to age 21 season.
All right, so draft pick things, because that is why you're here.
That's why we're here.
Yeah, there was. I mean, Sam was right at the beginning. I'd say the Hawks probably have the most them and the Blazers might be the two that have the most things that could happen and could go either direction. But What are some of the guys that are on your mind with where the Hawks are picking? What are you thinking?
Well, I love Rondae Hollis Jefferson. That's kind of my guy. That's kind of like the guy I would love for the Hawks to take. He's not a great 3-point shooter, but if we've seen anything from the Hawks in the past, it's that they kind of have that Spursian ability to kind of make guys pretty good 3-point shooters. We just talked about Dennis. Damari Carroll became a 40% 3-point shooter in 2 years after being a career 29% guy. So maybe they can develop him into that, but I love the way he plays. Especially if you're losing a Damari Carroll this offseason. He's a guy that slots in behind Thabo. Thabo probably moves into the starting rotation. Slots in. He's a role player guy. Defensively, he's got the length and he can kind of bother people. He's athletic. He's my guy. I also like Bobby Portis, who is a big that can shoot the ball. Come in. Maybe you move Mike Scott and you kind of want to fill that role of, like, you need the bench guy that can shoot. Perro's probably off the books as well. Although they could bring him back, they do love the guy. Those are my two guys. Rondae Hollis Jefferson and Bobby Portis are the two that I would like to see. I'm not a believer in Sam Decker. I just don't know what the hell position he plays in the NBA. I don't think he's an NBA guy. I think his shooting is something that tempts a lot of people, but he wasn't really a consistent shooter. He's a streaky type guy.
That's what a lot of people don't understand.
Like, if you watched him in the tournament, you watched those couple tournament games where he was hot in the Big Ten.
You,
like,
think he's the best shooter of all
time. You think he's freaking going to come into the NBA and shoot 40% from three, which he's not. He's going to be an average 3-point shooter, a 33% guy that will get hot for a couple games, which is kind of what Perro was, except, I mean, Sam's obviously going to be playing more on the wing, and I just don't trust him defensively to be able to defend wings, you know?
You haven't even interviewed Rondae Hollis Jefferson yet. You're going to beg for the Hawks to trade up to get him once you talk to him.
That's what I've heard. That hasn't even factored into my decision-making. I try not to let who I would, like, hindsight, I remember interviewing Draymond Green in pre-draft stuff and wanting the Hawks to take him. Now I kind of feel like I was right there.
after each Suns
and run. we ended up taking John Jenkins that year.
Ronnie, you would really enjoy Bobby Portis a lot. It's just from an interview standpoint.
Do you see my avatar and the face I made him make?
No.
Look at my avatar. That was off a question that I asked Bobby Portis.
Yep.
He made that face. I was pretty proud of myself, yet terrified at the same time.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, Bobby Portis, he imagines before every game that someone slapped his mother so that gets in the right frame of mind.
I like that from a guy. Yeah, those are my two guys. Because I think looking at where we're at where the Hawks are at in the draft, I think the one position you can kind of cross off as a non-need is the point guard.
Yeah.
So Cameron Payne, those guys I just kind of take off of my board. I think the biggest need, in my estimation, because I do think Millsap comes back and Damari goes, I think the wing is a need. And even if you don't, Bazemore was good this year, but, like, for what Bazemore is.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But you would still want an upgrade, because the thing is, there's nobody behind Korver at the two-guard spot. And you can play Thabo there, but then all of a sudden you don't have anybody behind Damari at the three. So you need another wing to round out that wing rotation, because it got squirrely there, and you also would like some health. You know, you don't know when Thabo is exactly going to be back to being 100%. So I think Rondae's my pick, and he's probably not a guy that comes in the first year, because the Hawks just don't play guys a lot their first year. I do think he's a guy that could give you a few minutes here and there, and just as a defensive guy, as an athletic guy, you put him in a Damari Carroll role where he's a cutter. He has the ball in his hands a little bit, but you make him a cutter, you develop that shot. I really think he would be a great fit.
Yeah, no, I think Rondae is a pretty good fit. too.
Well, I love that pick too. I'm right with you. The two, yeah. Your two guys that you had as your top two, I completely agree with.
Yeah, Sam Dekker intrigues me for the Hawks because I think the Hawks could help his shooting,
right.
And the way he moves off ball is very, very intriguing for what the Hawks do off ball. They do all of that baseline screening.
Yep.
He'd be a very, very good fit in that. But like you said, I don't buy a lot of what he does right now, especially defensively. And I don't really know that he has a position.
That's where I'm at, is I just look at him and I'm, you know, and if there's one thing that the Hawks, as much as anybody in talks with people, it's the Hawks are, you know, it's funny. I got in a conversation with one of the front office guys, and he asked me, he was like, would you rather have the 24th overall pick in the draft or Shelvin Mack, knowing what Shelvin Mack is?
The 24th pick.
Shelvin Mack.
Really?
Because what's the 24th pick turn into?
I'll take...
Honest question, name a guy that late, that name the average guy that comes that late in the draft. Is he going to turn into a guy that actually can play and is a rotation guy consistently? That plays, like, I mean, Shelvin was the backup last year and did a pretty good job. Would you have Mike Scott in the 24th pick? And that's what he asked. What I'm just saying is that's how the Hawks view the draft.
Yeah, I take the dart throw for the higher upside.
Sure.
That's just me and my philosophy. If I'd rather take...
I think that's the philosophy I think of most every blogger that I've encountered. I think there's a wild overvaluation of first round draft picks that aren't in the top seven. Because you look at a guy, I mean, you look at, if you're in the late lottery, what are you getting? I mean, you can get a good player there. I'm not saying you can't, but on average, you're probably not getting anything more than a minor rotation player, just because there aren't a lot of guys that come in the league and become stars.
This year, I think, is a little bit different, but most years, I agree with you.
Year,
there's a lot of talent in the late lottery.
I think there is a lot, which is why I'm glad the Hawks got the 15th pick this year.
Thank you.
I'm glad the Hawks were able to shout out to Billy.
It's
my man. Billy's my guy.
but no, I actually do agree with you. Looking at the 24th pick, that's the Cavs pick. You know, that's your Montrezl Harrell, your Justin Anderson,
your RJ Hunter.
RJ Hunter.
See, I would rather have Justin Anderson than Shelvin Mack.
I would. It depends on what kind of money you're getting Shelvin Mack for, on what kind of length.
Well, I mean, that's what I mean. He said
if you're getting Shelvin, like, if you're getting Shelvin for more than 2 years, I would rather have Shelvin. If you're getting him for the 1+1 deal he's on now at $2.4 million, I'd probably rather have the pick.
Right, but I mean, I think that's an interesting way to frame it. Just that was an interesting question from him.
Yeah, player-wise, I think he has a great point. I think he's
so
probably right, actually, that the 24th pick this year will probably not be as good as Shelvin Mack.
And your point is well taken, that I do it myself at times, maybe put an overvaluing on the draft picks, but I guess it's because you always look at through the prism of, hey, if you hit it, you basically have this guy on your team for 9 years at a great value. And it's very... It's situation dependent. Maybe a team like the Hawks, where they're trying to go and win it right now, it makes sense to have the veteran who can contribute in some way and can be reliable versus something that won't be ready to play in 3 years. If you're another team that's not ready to compete right now, probably makes sense to have the 24th pick and take that dart throw.
Oh, absolutely. I think situation plays a key, because it also depends on, as a team, what are you selling your fans? If you're the Hawks, you're selling your fans on the contender. If you're the Knicks, the Bucks, the Sixers, you're selling hope right now, which is why you have a guy like Giannis getting pushed as much as he is for what he is right now as a basketball player. You're selling hope. You're selling hope that Giannis reaches that full potential. Because what he is right now isn't the guy that everybody says he is.
That Giannis right now is actually a good basketball player.
No, I'm not 100% sure either, but what you're selling is, yeah, but look what he could be.
Yeah.
You know, look at these flashes of brilliance from this freakish 20-year-old kid.
Yep.
But at the same time, he could just be that. he could be a flash. He could be a guy that gives you flashes and never puts it all together. But as a team, you're selling hope, because if your fan base has never had anything concrete, or, you know, you're not in a position to be the contender, you have to sell the hope of the contender, and that's what the draft's all about. That's what the mid first round picks are all about, which is why you see them take kind of the high upside guy rather than the concrete guy, and you see guys that slide more, that you know what they are, but they slide because they're not as you can't sell the ceiling. You know, that's what you're selling to people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I totally agree. If you're the Bucks, it's a lot easier to sell Giannis on, look at this 6'11 freak, yep, versus look at Nick Batum.
Yeah, exactly. Because, you know, it's really interesting. I think it's kind of a cynical way to look at the draft, but it's more realistic than I think what a lot of people think the draft is. And you look at the Sixers. I mean, the Sixers have to sell the hope.
Yeah.
Which is why they take guys like Embiid. It's easier to sell hope when the guy's not on the floor.
Yeah, I mean, it's easier to sell hope once you can trade Michael Carter Williams too.
Right,
because you realize what Michael Carter Williams is, and then
you can't sell hope when you're looking at Michael Carter Williams turning the ball over 8 times a game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that hope's not there. I don't know.
No, you're right.
I hope this. I'll give. That they're doing more than just selling hope. I hope that they're more looking to build a basketball team eventually, and they're just...
Oh, I think they are, but I think in the early stages, especially when you're doing what they're doing, it's much easier to sell hope. It's much easier to sell Nerlens off a year and then coming in. It's much easier to sell Embiid coming in than it would have been to sell a lot of the other guys in that draft that are probably going to struggle, and you're going to watch them struggle on the floor, and all of a sudden you go, oh, crap, what are we doing? You know? I mean, Hinkie pretty much bought himself 3 years of goodwill, mm-hmm, which is truly incredible. I mean, it's a genius move, because worst case scenario, he's going to have a longer tenure than most GMs just because he's able to sell the hope. It's brilliant.
Yep.
Absolutely brilliant.
I forget who made that point originally, but it was a really, really smart one about how Hinkie has set him. I mean, he even more than 3 years, the way he's constructed roster.
What I'm saying is he gave himself 3 years before any real criticism hits.
Yeah, I got ya.
Which gives you another 3. The man bought himself a 6 to 7 year career on something that may not work. It's amazing. And Danny Ferry is an idiot and said something that he really shouldn't have said on the scouting report, and is out after 2 years.
Yeah.
With what he did. It's amazing.
Yeah.
It's truly amazing.
Might never be able to find a job again.
Might never be able to find a job in a similar
capacity.
Area.
Yeah,
right.
He'll find.
He's going to be in the front office somewhere, but probably behind the scenes.
Yeah.
I can see him going back to the Spurs.
I was just about to say, the Spurs are the type of organization that would sell it as a redemption type thing. You bring him back, sit him behind the scenes, and take advantage of... I mean, he still has wild connections around this league, and a lot of people that still like him.
Scott Layden works for the Spurs. Think about that.
Yeah, that's a little bit terrifying.
Yeah.
Amazing. All right, Robbie, we'll let you go. So, Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, the way you want to...
That's my pick.
Anything you would like to plug if people make it through our 40 minutes of babbling about TVs and pick up basketball and some walks?
I think this is a mock draft record.
Yeah.
As far as length.
I mean, oh, man. I'm not surprised.
We went pretty long with Charlie Widows, but I think that Robbie...
I'm not surprised by that either.
And Dubin also...
We went pretty long with Jared, too, yeah.
Talking about the Hornets, that was miserable.
Yeah, this was at least more fun. The Hornets just made me sad after.
The Hornets are a sad, sad team right now. It's really sad, especially what they were 2 years ago.
Yes.
So much hope. And then Lance.
Oh, I don't mind Michael Jordan being sad. That's good.
Spoken like a true Knicks fan.
Yeah.
I don't know. If you like college football, you can read me over it. Fan Buzz. I do the occasional thing over at Sam's place of business at CBS.
Sometimes. Well, when's golf coming up again?
I don't know. I'm not on U.S. Open coverage, but they'll do a good job. I don't know what I'm doing next over there. It's been kind of don't know.
That's
something,
what I'm,
at some point.
That's
something at some point. So, you know, stay tuned. It's good. And you know,
my lovely editors let Robbie do an Oregon Trail for the NFL draft.
Yeah, they really let me do a lot of stupid stuff over there, so that's why I like them.
Robbie, what really impresses me about you is the vast amount of sports you have knowledge in and can legitimately talk about. It's pretty, like, I consider myself pretty well-rounded when it comes to sports, but you, like, put me to shame. NASCAR.
Yeah, I have very little to do in my life. I'm watching the Women's World Cup right now. I can't talk about that very much. But, yeah, no, I mean, my weekends are filled watching golf and NASCAR.
Yeah.
And hoops. When it's around.
Yeah, I remember whenever the step ladder thing went down, I became a soccer writer for a day.
Right. I mean, you kind of have to do what you gotta do what you gotta do.
Yeah.
And it just helps have a little base in everything, because you never know what's going to get brought up.
Exactly.
When you're talking about something. So, you know, I like to have a little info on whatever.
But,
also boxing.
Yeah, you know? Do the boxing stuff I like. I've kind of fallen off of it. I used to watch a lot more, and I watch occasionally now.
I hope people get back into it, because there's a lot of good fighters right now. I'm going to sell boxing real quick. there's a lot of good young fighters right now. I'm thinking about making a trek out to Birmingham for the Wilder fight this weekend. There's a lot of good fighters right now. We're going to get Canelo Cotto soon, which is going to be fun. Triple G is a lot of fun.
That's the thing. It's not just good fighters. There are a lot of fun fighters right now.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Which I think is kind of due to Floyd. Everybody's like, well, we can actually make money if we're actually fun.
Yeah,
We're
starting to get that resonance of, you know, Floyd sucks, but hey, like, you know, we put on a fun fight, you know, we're gonna get paid too.
Absolutely, so we're getting a lot of those guys, the heavyweight division is getting a little better. I like Wilder a lot. When the heavyweight division's good, boxing's better. But the middleweight division is the best right now.
Yeah,
so good.
Yeah.
So yeah. Watch sports, people. That's my pitch. That's my ending pitch. It's just watch sports and movies like I do. And,
hashtag watch the games.
But do check out Robbie's college football stuff as I'm sitting here pining for football. Fanbuzz.com. He does do a really good job with that, and he teaches me a lot as I try and follow way too many teams in college football. He kind of covers it for me. There we go. That's my pitch.
I appreciate that.
That's my pitch.
I appreciate that, Brian. It's very kind.
Anytime. All right. Yeah, this was a podcast supposed to be about basketball. That's another
edition. We got some basketball talk in.
We
got a little bit in.
Yeah,
it was like
50-50.
We got our 25 minutes of basketball in that we were supposed to do.
We did. It works, you know.
That's
we made it work.
Yeah. All right. Then that's another edition of the Amateur Hour podcast mock draft.